The Los Angeles Dodgers have officially made Roki Sasaki and Yoshinobu Yamamoto once-a-week pitchers. Will they be the last in Major League Baseball? Yes, welcome into another episode of First Pitch, your daily source of baseball talk here on the Inside Baseball Network. My name is Troy Brock. I'm your host. You can follow me on Twitter at TroyBBaseball. He's Drew Crabtree. You can follow him on the Twitter machine at DrewCrabtree12. And we're going to talk about Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Roki Sasaki being once-a-week pitchers and whether or not we think that's going to be a thing coming to the rest of Major League Baseball. We're going to talk about some of the worst contracts currently in Major League Baseball, not named Anthony Rendon. And of course, we're going to talk about yesterday's games as well as looking ahead to today's games. And we're going to get to all that a little bit later. But first, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, turn on the notification icon so you can be notified when another episode just like this one goes live. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star rating, share the show with your friends, send them to First Pitch Podcast so they can get their daily source of baseball talk, and check out the First Pitch newsletter. Today's issue talked about what general managers should be coveting in Major League Baseball players, but really haven't been for the better part of the last decade. That bad boy is free to subscribe to and receive in your email inbox every single weekday morning, but we do appreciate any and all paid subscribers as they help keep the bills on around here. And finally, as a programming note, again, no episode on Friday as both Drusif and I will be out of town. Pod will be back on Monday as normal. Drew, how you doing today, bud?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to the NFL draft tomorrow. Real quick, who are your boys picking?
Am I Bengals?
Oh, all right. Yeah. Who are your Bengals picking?
I don't know, Drew. Who are my Bengals picking?
You've disowned your Cowboys because of Dak Prescott. I'm hoping for like a Walter Nolan or Kelvin Banks Jr. If they pick Will Johnson, I will legitimately crash out on Twitter. I'm tired of picking guys who are good because they know the offense's plays. But yeah, I'm ready for the NFL draft. I'm ready for some more baseball. My Reds need to get going.
What number do the Cowboys pick at? I don't pay attention to NFL that much.
I don't know, but they suck. So let me double check.
I'm assuming it's top 10.
I don't think it's top 10. I don't think they were really that bad. Yeah. The Bengals are at 17. The Cowboys are at 12.
That's right. I did know that. Okay. 12. Huh. Yeah. If he's still there, I wouldn't mind Ashton Jeanty. If he's still there,
I think Jeanty might go 5 to the Jags.
You think
so? There's a lot of smoke there. Yeah.
Is there? Okay. Well, then if he's not there, then if this other guy is still there, I wouldn't mind Tetaroa McMillan to be opposite CeeDee Lamb. I think that would be good. Though the Cowboys do still need a quarterback, but they're not going to do that great with a bunch of wide receivers getting thrown to them by a piss poor excuse of an NFL quarterback. But Shador
Sanders, come on down.
No. I don't want to go from one Dak Prescott to a poor man's Dak Prescott. It's a weak quarterback class this year, man.
It is. I'm glad that my team has a good quarterback, though.
Yes. Joey Burrow, QB1.
Yes, sir.
Now, we're going to get to baseball, but I do have one more NFL question since we're talking about this. Gun to your head. Joe Burrow or Carson Palmer?
Joe Burrow.
Oh, okay.
No, I like Carson, but no. Burrow is him. Burrow would have won the Super Bowl with one of Carson's teams. Carson would have broken underneath Burrow's offensive line. You could put every gun in the world to my head. I'm picking Burrow every single time.
Yeah, Joe Burrow's great. It's just one of my all-time favorite football players is Ocho Cinco, of course. But, he was fantastic, especially in NFL Street. I freaking loved NFL Street, man. I used to play the hell out of that game.
Cheat code.
Yeah. But again, baseball podcast, not football podcast, though the NFL draft is tomorrow. So yesterday there were baseball games, which the NFL cannot say. And the first game of the day was the Yankees at the Guardians. And the Guardians won that one 3-2. They are now 14-9. Yankees fall to 14-10. Tanner Bibee got the win. He's now 2-2 with a 5.19 ERA. And Leiter got the loss. He's 2-2 with a 3.48 ERA. Padres at the Tigres. Padres won 2-0. Padres are now 17-7. Tigers fall to 14-10. Nick Pivetta. Nick Pivetta, of all freaking people, 4-1 with a 1.2 ERA. Excuse me. And Suarez picked up his 10th save of the year. Padres have 17 wins. Suarez has 10 saves. That's insane. He, you know, hopefully for the Padres' sake, he doesn't get worn out before the All-Star break, because that's a lot, man. Reds at the Marlins. Marlins won that one 4-3. Reds fall to 11-13. Marlins fall to 11-12. Drew, what you got on that one?
They made Edward Cabrera look really, really good. That catcher of theirs, Ramirez, rookie, making like his second start. At the plate, kid can rake. Behind the plate, might be a bit of a liability. Remember when we were talking about that whole, if a pitcher commits an error, the run that ends up scoring should be charged to him?
Yeah.
That happened again. Graham Ashcraft, I think, sailed a throw to first. Yeah, Reds lost 4-3. That sucked. They need to win tonight, and then they need to honestly sweep the Rockies if they want to keep in tow.
Yeah, the Reds had a 3-2 lead going into the seventh, and then in the bottom of the seventh, the Marlins scored 2 to take the lead. Would not give it back. Orioles at the Nationals. Nationals shut out the Orioles 7-0. Nationals move to 10-13. Orioles fall to 9-13. And Dean Kramer has a 2-3 record with a 6.84 ERA. Man, something Baltimore's got to figure stuff out quick, because they're just digging that hole deeper and deeper. Mariners at the Red Sox. Red Sox take that one 8-3 to move to 14-11. Mariners fall to 12-11. And Brian Bayo got the win. He has a 1.8 ERA. That was his season debut. And yeah, Phillies at the Mets. Mets take that one 5-1. They are now 17-7. Same record as the San Diego Padres. And that is, in fact, the best record in baseball. Phillies fall to 13-11. Christopher Sanchez got the start. He did not have it through the first two innings, and then he left after the second inning. He threw 58 pitches through the first two innings, did not have command at all. And then it came out a little bit later in the game after he left that he was experiencing left forearm soreness, or tightness. So not good. Want to be reevaluated. They did say it may not be as bad as people are thinking it is going to be, but he is going to be reevaluated in the coming days. The bullpen was fine. The bullpen did fantastic. Joe Ross came in and pitched 3 shutout innings, only allowing one hit after Sanchez came out. Ross got through the third through the fifth, and then after Ross, it was Jordan Romano for the sixth, and he pitched a shutout inning. He allowed a walk, but he pitched a shutout inning. And then in the seventh, Rob Thompson pulled his same MO of having a pitcher in there. He gave another pitcher a clean inning in the seventh. But then once he got 2 runners on base, he brought in another pitcher with a runner on third. There was 2 outs whenever he brought in Kirk Ring, but the runner still scored because, of course, there was a runner on third. And you bring in a new pitcher without giving him a clean inning. And the silver lining in all of this is more and more people every day are finally coming around to the fact that Rob Thompson is not the guy. Cardinals at the Braves. Cardinals win that one 10-4. Braves fall to 9-14. Cardinals move to 10-14. Rockies at the Royals. This one went to extras. Royals won 4-3. They are now 10-14, and the Rockies are 4-18. Dodgers at the Cubs. This one also went to extras. Cubs won this one 11-10. They are now 15-10. The Dodgers fall to 16-8. And man, those Cubs might be something scary this year. White Sox at the Twins. Twins win 4-2. They are now 8-15. White Sox are 5-18. And fun fact, the White Sox are losing at a higher clip than they did last year. So take that for what it's worth. Astros hosting the Blue Jays. They won 5-1. They are now 12-11. Blue Jays fall to 12-12. Ronel Blanco got the win and lowered his ERA to 5.01. And Chris Bassitt got his first loss of the year and saw his ERA raise from sub-1 to sub-2. It's a 1.88 now. Pirates at the Angels. Pirates won 9-3. They are now 9-15. Angels are 11-11. Rays at the D-Bags. D-Bags won 5-1. They are now 14-9, and the Rays are 9-14. Brandon Fott got the win, and he lowered his ERA to 2.73, and he has a 4-1 record. So watch out for Fott down the stretch. Brewers at the Giants. Brewers win that one 11-3. They are now 13-11, and the Giants fall to 15-9. Jose Quintana just continuing to shove since making his late season debut for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's 3-0 now with a 0.96 ERA. And Jordan Hicks continues to not be a starter. He's 1-3 with a 6.59 ERA. Rangers at the Athletics closed out the night. Rangers won that one 8-5 in the minor league ballpark over there in Sacramento. They are now 14-9. Athletics are 10-13. And Patrick Corbin got the win. He's 2-0 with a 3.77 ERA. Is Patrick Corbin no longer the worst pitcher in baseball?
There are a lot of bad pitchers in baseball. I think he's digging his way out of that at the very least.
Yeah, it's he's had a great season to this point, and it was a good day of baseball. Drew, any final thoughts on yesterday's game?
I am starting to worry about those Baltimore Orioles. They managed one hit last night. Not good. The AL East is hard enough to win in. Obviously, they were playing the Nationals, so they need to get something going. One hit ain't gonna win you too many ball games. They're sitting at 9-13 now. Yeah, I don't know. Obviously, you know, putting up or giving up 24 against the Reds, it is what it is. But yeah, this Orioles team is pretty disappointing to this point. I'm wondering if they're gonna get it in gear, or they're gonna start selling a couple of pieces to try and build around those young studs.
Yeah, it's certainly looking more and more like they're going to be sellers at the deadlines with how the season's played out for them to this point. But I am glad you highlighted that game, because I did want to touch on Dylan Cruz. He seems to have found it finally. He hit a home run in yesterday's game, his third of the year. And over his last seven games, he's 9-27 with 3 home runs, 5 RBI, 1 walk, 1 strikeout, 3 stolen bases. He's hitting .333, .357, .704. Excuse me, in that time. So I think he's finally found it.
Love it. Love it when the Nationals are doing well, because as far as I remember, outside of the couple of, you know, spiky good years, the Nationals have been pretty sorry. So, I mean, it looks like your preseason belief that you need to keep an eye on the Nationals is definitely starting to come to fruition. That's a crazy division. Like, seriously.
Yeah. No, it is, man. It's Nationals, they're good, man. That young core, especially if Dylan Cruz has found it, because James Wood has found his power stroke. He's been on it this year. And back in spring training, James Wood, all of his home runs in spring training, I think he hit 4, were opposite field home runs. So far this year, I think he's hit 7 home runs in the regular season. All 7 of them have been opposite field home runs. So it's James Wood's got some scary power, and it's even more scary that he's only 22 years old. So it's he's the same height as Aaron Judge, and he's already at 22 hitting these opposite field home runs on a regular basis. So it's going to be scary what he's going to be able to do when he's in his prime, because he's not even there yet. But what else is scary in Major League Baseball is what some players who have been given these exorbitant contracts are just not able to do, and have not been able to live up to their contracts. And of course, you know, Anthony Rendon was given a massive contract, but we are going to leave him off the table, because obviously he's one of, if not the worst contracts in Major League Baseball, because not only has he not played for the majority of his contract, he's also tried to advocate for the season being shorter, a season that he doesn't even play in. So it's Anthony Rendon is off the table. Drew Crabtree, who do you think has the worst contract in Major League Baseball?
Anthony Rendon. So in terms of, when it comes to the rest of the league, I will still say that the whole Shohei Ohtani paying him $2 a year is definitely the worst in terms of return on investment and what you're spending on the player. I think that I am going to go the route of Nolan Arenado for the Cardinals. Ooh. Obviously, everyone knows how elite he is as a fielder. You know, he's got 10 gold gloves, 6 platinum gloves. He's legitimately a Hall of Fame defender. But at the plate, he's been okay for the last few years. The last 3 seasons, including this year, his OPS plus were have been 108, 102, and then this year it's 126. He's got 2-2 WAR in 23, 2-5 WAR in 24. Yeah, he was an all-star in 2023, but he was, you know, there's a little bit of name recognition that goes with it since it's still a fan-voted event. The Cardinals were trying to offload that contract this offseason, and Nolan Arenado was like, nah, I don't want to go anywhere. I'm just going to stay here. I like the Cardinals spending a lot of money on players that aren't nearly as good as what they're supposed to be. It makes me very happy. But like, I like Nolan Arenado. I hate the Colorado Rockies for shipping him off to St. Louis for half of a stale sandwich. But that contract now, according to SpotTrack, it's the 19th highest contract in baseball right now. And the overwhelming majority of the contracts above him are all all-stars, MVP level, future Hall of Famers, and so on and so forth. So like, it's pretty difficult to find one that's worse than Anthony Rendon. Obviously, in Cincinnati, the Jamer Candelario and Nick Martinez decisions are not aging gracefully, but evidently I talk too much about the Reds, so we will just leave that there. Yeah, I'm going with Nolan Arenado. His glove might be worth that, but his bat is not quite to snuff for his 8-year, $260 million contract. He slots in right there, right above Anthony Rendon, oddly enough, the man who plays 50 baseball games a year and has not shown up this year because he's still injured or just deciding not to play baseball.
Yeah, yeah, that's a spicy one. I like that one. I definitely didn't see Nolan Arenado. I mean, I agree with you. He has not lived up to the contract offensively.
Looking at this list, though, it's hard because, like, you got Juan Soto, Shohei, Vladdy, Mike Trout. Oh, I guess Mike Trout because of the injury, but I still think Mike Trout is one of the best baseball players when healthy of all time. Just like how I was with Griffey. Man, if he never got hurt, that's an entire like week's worth of episodes thinking about Ken Griffey Jr. and if he never got hurt.
I think that's what we'll do next week, Drew. Next week, we'll talk about Reds Monday through Friday. Does that work for you?
Oh. Yeah, first pitch in Cincinnati. Let's go. But yeah, no. A lot of these investments are pretty decent, but yeah, I don't know. I was scrolling for a long time to see how long it took to run into a Cincinnati Reds logo, and I think my phone crashed. Anyway, I'm going with Nolan Arenado. Who are we thinking on your end, Mr. Troy Brock?
Yeah, so it's no secret how I feel about Mr. Minnesota Twins Byron Buxton and Mr. Glass. You know, when M. Night Shyamalan wrote that movie, it was about Byron Buxton. It wasn't about Samuel L. Jackson. But it's
a hell of a catch last night, though.
Yes, he did. He did make a fantastic catch last night. I will give people credit when it's due. He did make a great catch. But he's not my pick for one of the worst contracts in Major League Baseball. I'm going to go with, and apparently I talk about the Phillies too much. I don't really give a damn. I'm going to go with Trey freaking Turner.
All right.
Yeah.
What do we have to justify that pick since mine was spicy?
Yeah, so Trey Turner was signed to an 11-year, $300 million contract. ahead of the 2023 season. I will go on record as saying I was excited about the signing. I was one of the people that was blinded by his prime, because when you look at Trey Turner's career, his best years came in his prime, his age 27 through 29 seasons, 2020 through 2022. In that time, he had a 139 OPS plus, including a 162 OPS plus in 2020 and a 145 OPS plus in 2021. Prior to that, from 2015 to 2019, his age 22 through 26 seasons, he had an OPS plus of 111. And since then, which is in his entire time with the Phillies, he has an OPS plus of 114. And he was brought in to be the number two guy in the lineup behind Bryce Harper. Not only has he been absolute dog water at the plate and just really unusable offensively, he is one of, if not the worst, defensive shortstops in baseball. He has improved this year. He has done okay this year defensively. I will give him that. Again, credit where it's due. However, over his career, he has not been good since about 2016, 2017, maybe 2018, with the glove at shortstop. He has been one of, if not the worst, defensive shortstops, and that is a prime position where you need your player to be. Most teams give up offense to get a good glove at shortstop. With Trey Turner, you're not getting either. And you paid him for his offense that he doesn't provide you. And it's a case of recency bias because, of course, his time in Los Angeles, as most players do, he put up a 131 OPS plus in 212 games with the Dodgers. As most players do, must be something in the water, might be something else, who knows? Cough, cough, wink, wink. But he was better in Los Angeles than he ever was with the Washington Nationals and than he ever has been or ever will be with the Philadelphia Phillies. And he's only going to get worse because he is 32 years old now. And he has just been batting out of the two hole. He's hit leadoff a couple of times this year, but he has just been absolutely unplayable offensively. And surprisingly enough, I looked at his rate stats and he has not been striking out as much as I thought he has been just from watching it. He strikes out less than at a rate lower than league average. And this year is at 19.6%, while league average for his career is 22.2%. And he's been walking way more than he ever has. He's been walking at an 11.3% clip this year, which is kind of what the Phillies offense has done. They have the most walks in baseball. I don't know if that changed after yesterday, but I know that going into yesterday, they had the most walks in baseball, and they were the only team with 100 walks going into yesterday. And they even walked more last night. And Trey Turner has been a big part of that. He has 11 walks and 97 plate appearances. But he just he's not running as much. He has 6 stolen bases this year, but he's been caught twice. And it's just the power's not there. He only has 5 extra base hits out of his 21 hits and only 1 home run. And he's never hit 30 home runs. And he hit 26 home runs in his first year with the Phillies, and he hit 21 last year in fewer games. And right now he's on pace for 8 home runs this season. So it's not good. And and they have him under contract until his age 40 season.
32 years old. I mean, you might as well just put him out to pasture at that point. Like, goodness gracious. I say that, you know, as a 31-year-old. No, I definitely don't disagree. I do find it, it does make sense that you'd pick a Philly. I probably would have picked a Red if they were in the top, 300. But, I think the Jamer Candelario contract is looking really, really bad. I will say, that the Chris Bryant contract is probably looking just as god awful. The former MVP and Rookie of the Year has been bad. He's been really bad, especially that last season. well, it's 2020, but these last few seasons for Colorado in Colorado, like it, you hit the laziest of fly balls and it finds its way into the seats. That probably has to go up there with the worst contract in baseball with Rendon, because yeah, bad. Good Lord. Yeah, we can't with when it comes to Philadelphia, you can't have a black hole where there is you're supposed to have a good shortstop, because when you play shortstop, the ball's going to find you. It's going to find you a lot, especially if you suck. We found that, you know, Jonathan India found the ball a number of times when he played second base, and he was not very good as a defender. He did get better, as you were talking with Trey Turner, but no, I guess that makes sense. I'm surprised you didn't say, you know, Bryce Harper, since, you know, you hate him so much.
I know. I hate Bryce Harper, man. Get that man off the Phillies. No, honestly. Bryce
Harper or Nick Martinez. Who says no? I mean, come on now.
Deal. Sign me up. It's if we weren't just limiting this discussion to players, and I'm going to beat that damn horse, I would have said Rob Thompson.
fair enough.
But no, it's but yeah, and that contract, to be fair, that contract for Chris Bryant, yes, it's been rough, and it's honestly only going to get worse because he might be done now with the most recent diagnosis of the degenerative lumbar disease, or whatever it was. His career might be over, and that is sad. It's you know, you don't want to see a guy's career end like that. Whether you like them or you don't. Like, I don't want to see Byron Buxton get hurt, but it's going to happen. I mean, I'm not going to lie to myself and say, oh, he's never going to get hurt, because it's going to happen. I don't want to see it, but prepare for it. Hope for the best and prepare for the worst. A line from an emo song of mine that I like, but it's, yeah, you know, there's a lot of bad contracts in Major League Baseball, and those are just a few of them, but a couple of contracts that haven't been that bad so far in Major League Baseball belong to Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Roki Sasaki. And, you know, those are two pitchers that came over to Major League Baseball from the NPB. And in the NPB, they kind of have their pitchers on a NCAA baseball schedule where they pitch once a week. And so they have larger rotations than those here in Major League Baseball. Or maybe it's scheduling. I don't freaking know. But it's... You know, the Dodgers have kind of gone back to having Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Roki Sasaki serve in that role of being once a week pitchers. Yoshinobu Yamamoto has been their Friday guy, and Roki Sasaki has been their Saturday guy for the past at least 3 weeks. And that could be what we see them do throughout the season. And of course, it's going to limit their workload. It's going to limit the amount of starts they get. It's going to limit the amount of innings they pitch. But at the same time, it gives them, it's more what they're used to. It's more what their body is used to. It's going to give them a better opportunity to stay on the field. And so I do have a couple of questions with this for you, Drew. And my first question is, with the way that the rest of the Dodgers rotation is constructed, how detrimental is this going to be whenever these guys begin to get injured? Blake Snell's already injured. Tyler Glasnow had some cramps in his last start. Dustin May reverted back to a pumpkin in his last start. And, you know, Clayton Kershaw is on the way back, but he's 80 years old and has a bone spurs in his big toe. So there's no guarantee that he's going to stay healthy whenever he returns. So how detrimental is having these two guys be once a week guys? Like, how is this going to hurt them when that inevitably comes to happen?
I think on paper, it is an awesome idea. With if you have a 100% healthy rotation, and that rotation does well enough that you can burn one of those days as a bullpen day, et cetera, et cetera. It's an awesome idea, because it does, as you say, make sure that the wear and tear on those, you know, superstar or even potential superstars with Roki Sasaki, it limits the wear and tear. But Yeah, if the rotation outside of them is starting to falter a little bit, you probably have to go. You're probably going to need to go back to a traditional rotation of sorts. Now, if I don't know if this is going to be something that catches on in Major League Baseball, but at the same time, when I was in high school, I didn't expect them to get rid of the DH. I didn't expect them to do the pitch clock. I didn't expect them to do all these other Major League Baseball tinkering with the game changes. Obviously, this would be more of a team-level decision. But if you have a rotation that can support six guys like that, or and then if you're playing a full week through having that bullpen day, I think it'd be a really smart idea. But yeah, with the if the rotation is starting to disintegrate, I guess, and you can't trust the other three pitchers, other four pitchers in the rotation to hold down their days, like getting two wins out of a week is fine if you're the Angels or you're the White Sox. I imagine that the goal in Los Angeles is a little bit higher than winning on Friday and Saturday. I think that they'll probably tinker with it. They'll continue to tinker with it. But if, like, you know, like I said, on paper, I love the idea. Limit them, and try to make sure that you get an entire season's worth out of these guys rather than maybe pushing them. And then once they hit that 20, 25 start mark, it just falls off a cliff.
Yeah. No, I agree. I do kind of like it to a point, but on the other hand, kind of to play devil's advocate here, I probably the only thing that me and the old heads / Facebook baseball fans come together on is I like my players to be durable. I like my starting pitchers to throw 200 or more innings a season, especially the aces. And I like my position players to play at minimum 150 games, if not all 162, especially the superstars. So at the same time, it is going to limit the amount of innings they get. It's going to limit their starts. I think it's going to work for them because, again, coming from the NPB, that's what they're used to. That's what their bodies are used to. It is a higher chance of keeping them on the field more often. But at the same time, you have to have a rotation. Like you said, you have to have a six-man rotation in order to really make that work because of the fact that there's more than just four or five days in a week. And more often than not, with a normal five-man rotation, a couple of guys in that rotation are getting more than one start every week. And so if you're limiting two of the guys in your rotation to only one start a week, then you have to have at least a six-man rotation, if not a seven-man rotation. And we have seen that across baseball over the past few years. More and more teams have kind of gone to that six-man rotation build of their for their starting pitching. And I think that, honestly, that is going to become more and more the norm moving forward, especially after the success that Roky Sasaki has had. Now that the Dodgers have gone to this, y'all are pitching one day a week, and Roky Sasaki's pitching Saturday, Yoshinobu Yamamoto's pitching Friday. And I think that this is going to be, I think a lot of pitchers are going to like seeing that. I think that it's going to get in their head, oh, they can pitch one day a week. They know what day they're going to pitch. They can have the same routine every single week, week after week. They can do the same things on the same days every week. Like, I kind of like that. I want to do that. And I think that you're going to see that more and more. I think it's going to kind of take a little bit of time to get all the way across baseball because you have guys like Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola. I don't think Hunter Green would like to do that. I think Hunter Green's a guy that's going to be like, no, if my turn in the rotation comes up twice a week, I'm pitching twice a week. Or Spencer Strider when he's healthy, or Spencer Schwellenbach, or Max Fried, or just the list goes on and on of these guys. These older school guys who are American and have pitched the American style of Major League Baseball for so long that they want to take the ball every fifth day instead of once a week. And of course, Aaron Nola sucks if he doesn't pitch every fifth day. He sucks if he doesn't pitch every fourth day. The longer he has to rest between starts, the worse he is for some reason. And that's another topic for a different day. But it's I do think that this is going to be something that we see come to Major League Baseball with time, especially if Roky Sasaki and Yoshinobu Yamamoto continue to have success with it.
I'm definitely subscribed to this. I want to see where it goes, because obviously saying this at the end of April is great, but we have we might have a couple of baseball games left on the schedule to see how this affects how the Dodgers roll, and then their influence on the rest of the league to see if anyone else does it. I do agree there are going to be some pitchers that are set in how they prepare and everything like that, and they're like, I just want to go my normal every 5 days, because if you're pitching Sunday, you'll pitch Friday again or something like that. I think on paper, yeah, it could be a good idea. I'm very interested to see where this goes, though, because if it helps reduce injury for players, I'm usually for it. And if this is a way to make it so that the top pitchers in Major League Baseball lessen the chance that they go on the IL for even a short amount of time, I'd like to see more teams trying to fiddle around with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I 100% agree. It's part of the nuance and the ins and outs of baseball that is interesting to me and to you as well, it seems. And so it is something definitely to keep an eye on for the foreseeable future. And then, of course, also in the foreseeable future, we have a bunch of baseball games today to keep an eye on, Drusev. And it's another full slate of baseball games. And my God, I can't stop choking. And it's Wednesday, so we got lots of day games today, and we love day games here at First Pitch. And the first day game comes at 12:15 p.m. Eastern, which means it's 11:15 my time, though I am blacked out, so even if I wanted to watch it, I couldn't. But it's the Cardinals at the Braves. Miles Michaelis at Bryce Elder, the battle of the 7-plus ERAs. Cardinals look to move to 11-14. Braves look to move to 10-14. 1:10 p.m. Eastern, Padres at the Tigres. Padres look to move to 18-8. Tigers look to move to 14-10. Padres is already in Spanish, so I don't have to put that in Spanish like I do the Tigres or the Gigantes. Phillies at the Mets. Also at 1:10 p.m. Eastern, Phillies look to move to 14-11. Mets look to move to 18-8. Zach Wheeler versus David Peterson in that one. Expect the Phillies to get out of there with at least one win and not get swept by the much weaker opponent in the New York Mets. 1:10 p.m. Eastern as well. Cincinnati Reds at the Miami Marlins. Reds look to move to 12-13. Marlins look to move to 12-12. Brady Singer at Sandy Cheeks. Drew, what you got on this game?
Please don't get swept by the Marlins, man. Sandy Alcantara has not been good at throwing baseballs this year, and I'm really hoping that one of those double-digit run outputs that the Reds like to save for every other series is on tow for today. I need them to win this getaway game so that they can go to Coors Field on the right note. Getting swept by the Miami Marlins is a bit of a dampener on the vibes. I will definitely say that. Please don't do that. Please don't get swept by the Marlins.
Yes. Getting swept by the Marlins is not something that any team wants to do this year. Not even the White Sox or the Rockies. But the last game at 1:10 p.m. Eastern. Excuse me. Yankees at the Guardians. Yankees look to move to 15-10. Guardians look to move to 15-9. Then the rest of the games are night games, starting with 6:45 p.m. Eastern. Orioles at the Nationals. Tomoyuki Sugano at Trevor Williams. Orioles look to move to 10-13. Nationals look to move to 11-13. Sugano's really been the only bright spot in that Orioles rotation this year. 6:45 p.m. Eastern as well. Mariners at the Red Sox. Mariners look to move to 13-11. Excuse me. God. Red Sox look to move to 15-11. 7 p.m. Eastern, Dodgers at the Cubs. Dodgers look to move to 17-8. Cubs look to move to 16-10. Dodgers are throwing the dreaded TBD, and the Cubs are throwing Matthew Boyd and his 2.01 ERA. 40 minutes later, 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Rockies at the Royals. Rockies look to move to 5-18. Royals look to move to 11-14. Michael Lorenzen on the mound for the Royals in that one. Also at 7:40 p.m. Eastern, Blue Jays at the Astros. Blue Jays look to move to 13-12. Astros look to move to 13-11. Bowden Francis for the Blue Jays. I like Bowden Francis. He's a pretty good pitcher up there north of the Boda. Also at 7:40 p.m. Eastern, White Sox at the Twins. White Sox look to move to 6-18. Twins look to move to 9-15. 2 hours later, 9:38 p.m. Eastern, Pirates at the Angels. Pirates look to move to 10-15. Angels look to move to 12-11. And Angels are throwing Kohanowitz. Drew, any Kohanowitz thoughts today?
We can say it correctly now. It's Kohanowitz. I'm interested to see what Andrew Heaney has for Pittsburgh tonight. He's off to a pretty solid start. 2.13 ERA, 1-1, obviously. Pitcher win-loss record doesn't really matter. You could give up one run and end up with the loss. It's definitely an interesting matchup that is kind of buried on the docket because it is the Pirates and the Angels.
Yeah, it's a very interesting name matchup because if you pronounce both of these guys' names wrong, you can get Heaney and Kokkinowitz. And so it's just yeah, this show's clean. But yeah, Heaney, hashtag better than Skeens.
No, stop it. Quit it. Knock it off.
2 minutes later at 9:40 p.m. Eastern, the Tampa Bay Rays head to or stay in Arizona to face the D-Bags. Taj Bradley on the mound versus Eduardo Rodriguez. Rays look to move to 10-14. D-Bags look to move to 15-9. 5 minutes later, Brewers at the Gigantes. Brewers look to move to 14-11. Gigantes look to move to 16-9, and they got a good chance of it with Logan Webb on the mound. And then you look across the way, and you got Freddy Peralta and his 1.91 ERA. So it's quietly a good pitching matchup today. So that'll be a fun one that I will not be staying away for. And 10:05 p.m. Eastern, Rangers at the Athletics. Kumar Rocker at J.P. Sears. Rangers look to move to 15-9. Athletics look to move to 11-13. Final thoughts on today's slate, Jerusef.
Please don't get swept by the Marlins. The two NL Central leading clubs, the Cubs and the Brewers, are starting to look pretty decent. The Brewers are again annoying. They're that thorn in the side that everyone expects not to be great, and yet here they are, right behind the Cubs for the division. Beating up on the Giants last night was pretty impressive, and I think they can steal another win from behind Freddy Peralta. That the Brewers, man, you just can't count them out. It's super annoying. Brewers and Cubbies, both good baseball teams. The rest of the NL Central, not quite. The Reds, very boom or bust. The Pirates are the Pirates. The Cardinals aren't trying to win baseball games. It's such a weird division.
I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
There you go. Yes, it is going to be a good day of baseball. It is always a good day of baseball because we love baseball here at First Pitch. Thank you for joining us on today's podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. Turn on the notification icon so you'll be notified when another episode just like this one goes live. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star rating. Share the show with your friends. Send them to firstpitchpodcast.com so they can get their daily source of baseball talk. Check out the First Pitch newsletter. Link for that bad boy is in the description. In today's issue, talked about the type of players that general managers should be coveting, though they really aren't and have not been over the better part of the last decade. It's free to subscribe to the newsletter, though we do appreciate any and also paid subscribers as they help keep the bills on around here. Again, no episode on Friday. Drew and I will be out of town. For Drew and I, this has been... If I can, oh, I clicked the wrong button. Hold on. This has been First Pitch.